You're listening to the best of Talkin' Sports with Byron, an on-demand audio presentation of RedPeachSports.com and ESPN977.com.
Thunder, baby, just like every week, we're going to try to bring the thunder today. Welcome to Talkin' Sports, just you and me, and I'm B. Byron Avery, your host here on Talkin' Sports, ESPN 97.7. Good afternoon, Mr. Tabor.
How goes?
You've had a busy morning, but I appreciate you being here with us as always. We've got a great lineup for you today. We've got several things to get to. We're going to jump into today's lineup right away, and we'll go there now, and hopefully we'll have our lineup card music as we present today's starting lineup. That's some more of my favorite music right there. As always, we'll start the show with What's Hot on the Lot with Zach Green from Car King. After that, we'll get back with Brett Hudson this week from the New Star. We'll talk a little high school baseball and softball action, plus some LHSAA news. We're going to have Michael Johnson from the Front Nine Tour talking to us about that organization again and what all they're doing for golf with young people. Our What's Up segment today will feature former Sterlington High School football player, former Grambling football player, and former Seattle Seahawk, DeMichael Dizer. Live and in studio today, we have Coach DJ Davis from Riser Middle School and with JustRunThePlay.com.
How y'all doing out there, ESPN?
We'll also be joined later in studio by Sean Williams of the Hoodat Nation Redemption, and with ProFootballSpot.com. So that's our lineup for today. We've got a jam-packed show. We've got a lot of stuff to talk about. We're going to go ahead and right now jump to Zach Green on the Car King hotline. Zach Green with Car King. How are you today, Zach?
Doing great today. How y'all doing?
I'm great. Great, great, great. It's a beautiful day again. It was rainy last week, but today is an outstanding day to go car shopping.
That's right. It's an outstanding day just to be outside, but you might as well be car shopping.
That's right. Well, why don't you start us off today by telling us what's hot on the lot?
Absolutely. I had a 2007 Dodge Nitro, one owner, 62,000 miles, $9,995. Also have a 2012 Toyota Corolla LE, 65,000 miles, one owner. That beauty will get you 30 miles to the gallon, $9,995. A 2008 Toyota Camry LE, 80,000 miles, one owner, $9,995. 2013 Chevrolet Sonic, 76,000 miles, one owner, 30 miles to the gallon. Also factory warranty, $9,995. And 2013 Nissan Versa, 30,000 miles, factory warranty for $7,995.
That's a great lineup you have there on the lot. And as always, we know that you have more than just that available. Zach, tell me, it's such a beautiful day. What are your plans this afternoon after you get off work? Are you going to watch the Derby? What are you going to do?
I'm going to watch the Derby. You know, fastest 3 minutes in sports, I think it's what it's called, and it's the most exciting.
Absolutely. Plus, we have, of course, our New Orleans Saints owner and some of his pals have some horses, but we have local owner Steve Davison, who has a horse in the hunt and supposedly will do pretty well. So we'll all be watching that, and hopefully after we come car shopping at Car King. Zach, remind us where you're located.
We are at 12 Louisville Avenue in Monroe, Louisiana, 318-330-9285, or check out our second location across from Daniel DuPont on Louisville, or just look us up at carkingmonroe.com.
All right, Zach, appreciate you and have a great day.
You guys have a great day. Appreciate y'all.
All right. Well, Coach, you're in studio with us.
Yes, sir.
You're with us for the second time, the first time in studio, the first time you were with us was out at the tennis courts.
Yeah, we was on location out at West Monroe High School, the tennis fundraiser.
That's right. Today, you're going to get to join us as we talk with Brett Hudson about some high school stuff, things that are near and dear to your heart.
Oh, yeah.
I want to first, Paul Turner, former West Monroe Rebel. Louisiana Tech Bulldog, now with the Eagles. What do you think about that?
Man, I think that's an amazing opportunity for a young man who's, in my opinion, and I think everybody out there who's listening can agree, who's done everything by the book. I mean, you think about, West Monroe working hard, doing a lot of big things over at high school in the position that he was in. Had a few setbacks, a couple of injuries, but he's done everything by the book. I mean, his mom and dad, I know them pretty well, and they've done everything that they could do to raise a young man who deserves everything and the shot that he's getting. So we're going to keep rooting for Paul and keep our fingers crossed and keep him lifted in prayer and know that if he continues to do what he's done his whole life, everything should work out.
And isn't that what it's about? We've talked about it before. What is, people say, man, he got lucky. But what is luck?
Right.
When opportunity meets preparation.
Preparation. And I think he's prepared. I mean, even after injuries, he's not let that get him down. He went back, got his therapy in, and just continued to work and got stronger and faster. And it proved in the pro day that they had.
Well, he signs as an undrafted free agent with the Eagles, who had a big day. They traded up to the number two spot in the draft and took a quarterback. So the Eagles are paying. And when we say paying, everybody's getting paid, but we're talking about paying three quarterbacks good money.
Yes.
So there's going to be a quarterback competition. I agree with Mike Golick in that Sam Bradford needs to strap on the big boy pants and just compete.
That's it.
And that's going to provide these opportunities, because if these three quarterbacks are trying to get out there, they're going to be playing their best.
Yes.
So get out there and compete and show what you can do when these three quarterbacks are competing, when the focus is on them, and it's time to shine.
I think what his advantage, and we're talking about Paul, is he gets in and, sometimes a lot of people, when you get drafted, highlight that extra pressure, I guess that's the word I want to use. But with him coming in, and like you say, with those quarterbacks that they have, he get in and go ahead and build a relationship and find that quarterback that you guys can build a relationship. And I mean, if you got to do some extra work and to show the coaches, hey, look, I'm willing to come in, build relationships, learn the playbook, and do what I got to do what I can to be not only a part of the team but be the best player that I can be.
Talking Sports, we are brought to you by Anytime Fitness of Monroe, West Monroe, and Calhoun, and Anytime Fitness of Ruston and Texarkana. This hour is brought to you by Gina Eubanks Allstate Insurance in Ruston and Minden. Gina Eubanks, agency owner since 1995. There's a lot going on, and we're going to just jump into just a whole bunch of stuff this show,
yeah.
Coach.
Yeah.
Before we take our first break, we got a little bit of time. Remind us why you're here.
Okay. Well, first and foremost, as B mentioned, guys, I'm the head football coach over at Riser Middle School. Born and raised here in West Monroe, played ball on the first state championship football team, and just had an opportunity to get back and into coaching. And actually, I'm coaching at the middle school that I went to, so there's a big connection there and a need and a want to see kids get better on and off the field. And right now, also promoting and doing some big things with the Just Run the Play company, which is the company that we use as a motivation through literature. We do speaking engagements, have several engagements that are on the calendar now. If we get a chance, we can talk about those. But really right now, we're just wanting to just create this energy to allow people an opportunity to see themselves win. And that's what Just Run the Play about, just wanting to see people win.
And that's a big deal in today's society. Again, winning doesn't necessarily mean on the field.
Right.
Winning in life is a much much bigger, much more important aspect of what we do.
Yes, sir.
So I appreciate you and your efforts getting out there with kids, because that's where it starts.
Well, I appreciate you guys allowing us to come on and be a part of what you're doing with getting the message out about not only, just like you say, the sports in general, but how sports and life are related and how they're connected.
Well, and that's another thing. A lot of people, you know, there's academics in school, and they're incredibly important.
Yes, sir.
Because that's what's going to support you the rest of your life. Sports is just an avenue for kids to be involved, learn how to do things with other people.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
A lot of our kids don't know how to interact socially.
Right.
So sports is a great avenue for that. Other clubs are as well. But sports is what people recognize more than anything. So why not take that avenue and do something with it to not only help people get better at sports, but to improve their life?
Yes. Yeah, because, you know, with life in general, once you begin to step out into the career world, I was telling somebody this other day, there's no, even if you're a sole proprietor, you still have to have skills, communication skills and personal skills to work with other distributors or other people in your field. And so a lot of times what we've learned, and even through my own life, you know, experiences, is that when you're able to work with teams through the good and the bad and work with other people, it helps in other areas of your life.
Absolutely. Well, that brings us to our first break. We're going to step back just a minute to run some of our sponsors. We want to recognize some of those. Segment, man, rough morning already. This segment is brought to you by Katie's of Monroe in Farmville. Go see Katie over on Louisville Avenue. Get you a great hot breakfast or a great lunch. She's in the former Cuppy's Coffee right in the County Market parking lot next to the Red State Farm building. Give us a call on the Car King hotline or the Pulpwood Producers text line. You can hit us up there, both at 888-993-7762. We'll be right back. You're listening to Talking Sports on ESPN 97.7 FM. In Living Color. We are live and in living color right here in the Coldwell Banker Group 1 Realty Studios. I'm your host, Byron Avery, and with me in studio is Coach DJ Davis.
In full effect, and I appreciate being here.
Right now, we're going to go ahead and jump to our next guest. Appreciate Brett Hudson from the New Star joining us. Welcome aboard, Brett.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me on.
All right. So, last time we talked, which was last week, you were in Sulphur. All of those games are now complete. We have champions. I've got some stuff to roll through here with you. I've printed out a ton of stuff to go over with you, but let's talk about what you know about the reforming of TOPS, because TOPS is a big issue. A lot of our athletes coming out of high school, especially in the non-football, non-basketball sports, need TOPS to help them go to college. So the last news I have is, you know, they were going to just do away with TOPS, cut it out altogether for now, but they have there is a bill, and the governor said he will sign it. That would keep it, but not increase it with tuition. So, what are your thoughts? What do you know about that?
Yeah, I mean, it's really unfortunate. You know, I was lucky enough to grow up in the state of Alabama that has a quite similar program, and I know there are several states around the Southeast, Georgia included, that have very similar programs that are essentially, which is my understanding of TOPS, is that it incentivizes Louisiana kids to stay in state to attend college and helps them pay for that decision if they were to make it. But, you know, from an athletic standpoint, I don't think it really affects LSU football too much, but I think it affects almost every other team in this state at the other universities. LSU baseball is one, especially with the ridiculous scholarship situation in college baseball, where teams have, what, like 13-point-something scholarships with over 25 roster spots. So a lot of college baseball players only get a partial scholarship to play baseball in college, and they fill that with academics. And there are programs like that all over campus at every institution. I think people keep up with football recruiting so much that they kind of assume that every college athlete on campus is under a full scholarship, and that's just not the case for,
right,
for
it's
most
just football athletes. And basketball, yeah.
Yes, yeah. So I think that's where you're really going to see in-state prospects maybe look elsewhere, because a lot of times for prospects that may not be some of the highly recruited, some of the most highly recruited players in the nation, it ultimately comes down to money more than fit or coaching, relationship, or anything like that. These families still have to pay for college, and we all know that's not cheap. So money does become a big deciding factor for programs like baseball and softball and others. So I think that's where you're going to see in-state schools, LSU, ULL, ULM, Tech, Tulane, et cetera, really, they may not struggle to keep kids in-state, but it's going to be a lot harder than it used to be, because I think there are going to be a lot of states out there that are able to give more money to kids to come to their school because of the current situation you mentioned earlier with the TOPS program and the battle it's going through.
Absolutely. Now let's get on to the high school softball, the Fast Pitch 56. It is now complete. We did not get a North Louisiana champion in 5A, but we did get a 2-5A, a District 2-5A champion. Ash beat Zachary, and we got chalk there because one beat two. Ouachita did make it to the semis, but falls to Zachary 8-3.
Yeah, you know, it was. I came away really surprised that North Louisiana didn't get a state championship, especially with four semifinalists. But at the same time, that goes to be a true testament of the quality of softball being played in this state right now. That as good of a team as Ouachita was, they couldn't get to the state title game because they happened to run into a team as great as Zachary was. But then again, I think we all knew that Alexandria was a team that was obviously of the caliber to win a state championship, given their two meetings with Ouachita in the regular season. So Ouachita coach Tim Whitman has told me several times, on and off the record, he thinks District 2-5A is the toughest district in the state in softball, regardless of class, and he thinks 5A is the best class in the state in softball, and he'll tell that to anybody, honestly. So I think that proves just how good 5A softball was in the state. But really, the same could be said for the top in 4A softball with Cabrini and North DeSoto, who is just out of this world, ending the seasons of Neville and West Ouachita in the semifinal. So I see Coach Whitman's point from top to bottom of 5A, but the very top of 4A can hang with anybody.
Right, because we had 1-3, seeds 1-3 winning there. We did have Neville and West Ouachita in different sides of the on different sides of the bracket in the semifinals, but both of them fall, like you said, leaving North DeSoto to defeat Cabrini 3-0 in 4A. So no local champion there. In Class 3A, we didn't have anybody in the semifinals, but Kaplan, number 4 seed Kaplan, beats Lutcher 4-0 in that championship game, and didn't have anybody in the semifinals of Class 2A, where now the state champion Calvary Baptist defeated Menard 8-4 for that championship. We did have Mangum in the quarterfinals there, but they fell to Calvary.
That Mangum team is someone to watch going forward. They did lose two seniors off this team. They lost an outfielder. And they lost a senior catcher. But they started an eighth grader at second base. They started one more eighth grader. I can't remember where. They started, I want to say, three or four freshmen and a couple sophomores, too. So to the 2A teams in Sulphur this year, you're going to want to get used to seeing the Lady Dragons, because they're going to be around for several more years, and I'm guessing they're not going to bow out of the quarterfinals often.
Probably not. Moving on to Class 1A, we did have Cedar Creek in the semifinals, but they fell to St. Mary 10-8, and then Catholic of Pointe-Coupee beat St. Mary 8-3 in the championship there.
Yeah, I want to say that that St. Mary's Cedar Creek game might have been the biggest upset of in Sulphur. I believe that because Cedar Creek was just so good. They had the best pitcher there in 1A in Mary Carroll. They really did. They had the best pitcher there in their classification. They had the bats to back her up. But then again, the entire 1A bracket got nutty when the 6th seed was playing the 8th seed in the state title game, when 8 seeds go to Sulphur and the 6th playing the 8th in the state title game, you know something went weird. And especially given St. Mary's, that 6th seed that went on to beat Cedar Creek, they had to take Hanson Memorial to 12 innings just to get to that semifinal to advance to championship Saturday. So, unfortunately, both Cedar Creek and Oak Grove were the victims of what was just a downright nutty 1A bracket.
Oh, man. Moving on to Class B, again, no local champion. Florine beats Holden. Again, the 1 and 2 seeds playing there for the championship. Castor, the 4 seed in North Louisiana team, did make it to the semis, falling 3-1 to Florine.
Yeah, the Class B bracket was really, really good this year. It's not always the case. It's very up and down in those Class B and Class C brackets. Sometimes everybody gets a few seniors together at the same time, and they can piece together some really good softball, and sometimes everybody's young. That wasn't the case in Class B this year. And to transition to Class C, speaking of young teams, Claiborne Christian got there as a very young team in Class C. So they're very much along the lines of Mangum in 2A. Class C teams will want to get used to seeing Claiborne Christian there for the next few years because I feel confident they're going to. Is Claiborne Christian going to develop that youth into a program that can beat the now 6-time defending champions in Class C, Hatbury? I don't know if they will, but they have just as good a chance as anybody given the amount of 8th graders and freshmen they have on this team and still getting to Sulphur and almost winning their quarterfinal game when they got there.
Yeah, the number 5 seed Claiborne Christian does fall to the 4 seed St. Joseph's 5-4. So we didn't have a North Louisiana team in the semifinals, but like you said, Claiborne Christian, they've been there before, and now it looks like they're working their way back to consistently be there again. Over to baseball. We still have a team, Ruston, and you may have an update for us. Ruston is in the quarters. They lost to Acadiana in the first game, so 5-8. But what happened in there? Did they play last night? They ended up playing.
Yeah, they played last night. They're playing what Ruston fans will hope is a doubleheader today. Got to win both of them to advance to Sulphur in 5A. They were up in that game in yesterday's game 1-5, and then Acadiana scored 8 unanswered runs to take that one away from them. That's a heartbreaking way to lose a game 1, especially since game 1 and the 3-game series are just so crucial. Going into that next day, almost pressure-free, knowing that you can have a bad inning and it's okay because you've got 2 chances to win 1 game to go to Sulphur. So I know they're underway right now. I don't know the score, but I wonder how Ruston reacts to having lost that game the way they did. I'd say if they play the first 3 innings of today's game in a quality way, I think they're mentally prepared to what Ruston fans hope is beat Acadiana in game 2 and force a game 3. And from that point, anything can happen in 7 innings of baseball. But I'm really interested to see how Ruston fares in those first 3 innings to get an idea of where they are mentally after losing game 1.
Right, yeah, to correct myself, Ruston played game 1 last night. So, yes, they lost 8-5 in the first game, and they're playing now against Acadiana in a best of 3. So let's hope they can pull that out and keep us, because that's our only North Louisiana team, local team in there. I know that Airline and Bird are playing each other, the 3-11 seed, Barb and Santa Ma, and then Jesuit and Catholic of Baton Rouge. Moving on to 4A, we still have West Ouachita. They beat Benton. They're the number 3 seed. West Ouachita beat 6 seed Benton, 3-1 yesterday, and so they're playing to try and win that best of three. You've got Franklinton and St. Michael, Brobridge against Tioga, and then Turlings Catholic against Grant in the other quarters. So West Ouachita still has a chance.
Yeah, they have a chance, and with that lineup, they're a threat to not only win one of two against Benton today, but also string together a couple wins in Sulphur. Coming into the year, you knew West Ouachita has the bat to support it. The starting pitching, I mean, even in at West Ouachita, where you know you have starting pitching, I guess what I'm getting at is I don't want to call starting pitching a question mark, because you know you have talent at West Ouachita, but for West Ouachita standards, the starting pitching was a question mark. So winning game one yesterday was huge, because now you give that lineup two chances to really just string together one good inning, which is all it took to beat Benton yesterday. You give them now two games that have that one big inning and send the Chiefs to Sulphur, and then at that point, you get in two one-game scenarios to win a state title, and with that lineup, you have to like the Chiefs' odds in 4A.
Absolutely. Down in 3A, we didn't have anybody make it to the quarterfinals, so we've got North Webster, E.D. White, St. Louis Catholic, West Feliciana, Brule, Lutcher, Erath, or as they say it there, Erath, and South Beauregard still playing for that championship. On to 2A, OCS dropped out. They were in the quarterfinals, lost in two games to Riverside Academy. We've still got the remaining teams are St. Thomas Aquinas against Notre Dame, Opelousas Catholic against Episcopal, and then Menard against St. Charles Catholic. So OCS, disappointing to many of us, not a negative against them because this is what happens, but disappointing to a lot of fans falling in the quarterfinals.
I have known that OCS lost that second game. Have they already lost?
Well, according to the LHSAA website, they lost 5-2. They lost 2-0 in a three-game series to Riverside.
Oh, wow. Yeah, that's really surprising to me. I also have high expectations for this OCS team, and if that is the case, if they've already lost today's game too, that is disappointing. But at the same time, we knew they were going up to 2A. We didn't know how that would quite affect their chances in baseball. We obviously saw it affect their chances very adversely in Division III in football. But I still think they have the team to win the state title in 2A, but this is baseball. Since when does the best team win every single time?
Right, absolutely. Now, again, that could be an error, but that's what it said today on the LHSAA website. It doesn't have a game two score for any of the other three games in the quarters, so it could be. Let's hope it's a mistake, but that's what it says right now.
Okay, I know that's game two was supposed to start at noon. Then maybe they played early on me, and I don't know. But we can only hope that OCS makes it, because I know if OCS does make it to Sulphur, they're probably going to be the best 2A team there.
Okay, well let's hope that was a mistake then. Moving on to 1A, Cedar Creek fell to Central Catholic. Oak Grove, the 7 seed, is still in it. So we've got Central Catholic against Hanson Memorial, and then Oak Grove will play the winner of, let's see, where is game 27? I don't know who they're playing, but scheduled for the 13th at 2 o'clock, Oak Grove to play in the semifinals. So Oak Grove still in it in Class 1A.
Oak Grove, to me, is one of those teams you come away from one of their games and you don't know why, but you just like that squad. You watch them play a couple times and you're like, you know, I can't really explain if it's a pitcher that I love or if they just play foundational defense, or I can't really find two hitters that I love to carry that squad. But when you come away from an Oak Grove baseball game, you're impressed. That's the kind of team Oak Grove is now. I've seen them enough times to kind of figure out that the top of their lineup is what probably impresses those people. They've got that video game blend of contact and speed guys at the top of your of your lineup with some heftier power bats in the 3, 4, and 5 holes. I mean, if you were doing a fantasy draft in an MLB video game, you would put together a lineup that resembled Oak Grove to win yourself a lot of baseball games over the course of a season. So I'm pleased that Oak Grove got out of the do or die game scenarios that are the one game playoff still intact in 1A, Class B, and Class C to get to Sulphur, because I think that lineup in Sulphur, they'll definitely get the opportunity to prove themselves, and I think it could go well for Oak Grove. Now, if they get in a battle with a tough pitcher, they're going to be in for a struggle, but that lineup can win on any given day.
Well, let's hope they can keep that going. In Class B, you know, I feel like the kiss of death. Twice I've talked to a coach to set up something on the show before a game, and twice that team has lost. But I had talked to Shudrant coach Tony Antley earlier this week and said, hey, if you guys win, I'll get you on real quick Saturday on the show. And it was like, great, yeah. And then they fall last night to Glenmora 19-6.
Wow.
So Glenmora, the 2 seed, will now face Fairview, and then Anacoco will face the number 1 seed, Grace Christian, in Class B. So Shudrant not making it there. Coach Antley had a great run this season. And then in Class C, Claiborne Christian, 4-1. I'm sorry, not 4-1. Claiborne Christian is the 4 seed. They'll play Elizabeth, the number 1 seed. And then Simpson and Downsville will play each other for the other game in the semifinals. On the 14th, the championship game could have Claiborne Christian against Downsville.
We had the call drop. Getting Brett back right now.
Oh, my bad. But that's live radio, folks.
Oh yeah.
Call drops, and you gotta pick it back up and run with it. So
you gotta run the play.
Gotta run the play, coach. Gotta run the play. Guess what? We gotta run it again now. But we'll hopefully get Brett back on. But that was the last class in the baseball tournament. We could have a North Louisiana champion there. So the number 4 seed, Claiborne Christian, will face number 1 seed, Elizabeth, in the semifinals. And then Downsville will face Simpson. We're going to go ahead and take a break. Hopefully we can get Brett back, because we still have some LHSAA stuff to talk about. But you're listening to Talkin' Sports, ESPN 97.7 FM. I don't know. That's what I always saying. Here come the Jetsons. But I'm sure that's not correct. Well, we've got Brett Hudson with the New Star back on the line. Brett, sorry for the disconnect there.
Oh, I'm sure it was on my end. Y'all are flawless.
That's right. Tabor does not make mistakes.
Never.
So we were talking about, at least I was, talking about Class C, where we still have Claiborne Christian and Downsville in the mix.
Yeah, no surprise that either of those two programs are in the mix in Class D baseball, right? I mean, Coach Oland has Claiborne Christian as a perennial contender in Class C, and I think having that program at the level it's been at for so many years has been beneficial to other baseball programs in the area. It's inspired a lot of great baseball among Class B and Class C schools here in the area. Downsville, obviously, being one of them. Downsville's got a team headed to Sulphur this spring. So I'm very interested to see both of those teams in Sulphur next weekend. And they're in opposite sides of the bracket, if my memory serves me. So it's possible they could meet in the Class C state title game. That sure would be something, but you had to love the makeup of this Claiborne Christian team. They went incredibly out of their way to get a brutal schedule. I want to say they played Neville at least once, if not twice. They probably played West Wachita, if I had to guess. So they went out of their way to play teams that on paper were more talented than them. And in some of those situations, they held their own because they've got a solid talent level of their own. So I think Claiborne Christian is 110% ready for the rigors of Sulphur.
Yes, and in Class C that we're talking about, Chalk held number one Elizabeth plays, number four Claiborne Christian, and number two Downsville plays number three Simpson. So 1, 2, 3, and 4 there, and yes, they are on opposite sides. So if both win their semifinal game on the 12th, they could face each other in the championship. All right. Also, we want to touch briefly. We had a local high school win the state track and field title. So Simsboro wins the Class B boys track and field title. They had 86 points, beating out number two Doyleen by 30 points. So good job there for the Simsboro Tigers. They also had some individuals. Three individual champions, Zach Taylor with a 6'4 high jump, Jacob Calhoun with a 155-foot javelin throw, and then Jordan Jenkins ran the 110 hurdles in 15.66. So congratulations to Simsboro in track, and good job there. Just another North Louisiana area state champion.
Yes. Yeah, you know, a good friend of mine, Josh Brown, the athletic director and basketball coach at the Simsboro. I don't know that I realized just how good of a situation he stepped into last season when he left West Wachita and took over there at Simsboro. They've just got athletes on athletes on athletes over there. That'll obviously show in your track and field program, which is nothing but a display of different kinds of athleticism. Makes me wonder just how good they would be in 1A if they were to develop a football team. But I'm guessing that's a subject that Simsboro doesn't necessarily want to approach this moment, especially Coach Brown, given what not having a football team has done for his basketball program.
Absolutely. Plus, you don't want to get into that discussion, because if you're in Lincoln Parish and you're playing football, Simsboro is probably not the place you're going to be. So we don't want to lose any athletes from Simsboro. We should probably need to stop right there. But let's get back. Last week we talked about some of the stuff going on with LHSAA, and then it more. You know, I don't know. We hear all this stuff about the NCAA and how they fumble through things, and we've heard that more and more with the LHSAA. But now we get into all the weather caused all this commotion about the it's a three-game series, and if you play game one and can't get the other two in, you know, game one is the deciding game. And we had all these blow-ups about the few games that the few teams that happened to. But and I've heard, you know, Mark Kramer of this of our family talk about it's a dumb rule, and it was put in place not for weather situations, but to keep people from delaying to hold out for a pitcher. Just tell me what you've heard about that this week.
Yeah, I this is only my second appearance on your show, so your listeners haven't heard me speak on the LHSAA too much. But elsewhere, I think I've made it pretty clear that I'm not necessarily the LHSAA's biggest ally in terms of how they've handled things in my almost year here in Louisiana. However, for once, I don't think this one is the LHSAA's fault. I think their job is to, above all else, number one, host championships, and number two, enforce the rules that their membership puts into place. And that's exactly what they did in this scenario. They enforced the rules that the membership put into place. So for once, this was not the LHSAA's fault. It's just a horrible rule. There's nothing short of that. There's no reason for rain to end a baseball season. That's a terrible way for a baseball team to lose their season. So I think that rule has to be changed, and I would be shocked beyond all measure if it's not changed the next time they can change a rule, whether they could slide that in the special session in June or if they have to wait until the regularly scheduled assembly next December to change that rule. But they have to change that rule. Now that they've seen it go so badly once, they just have to change that rule.
Right. Well, and here's my stand. My stand is always, if the rule's the same for everyone, then run with it. And I know that the LHSAA remind coaches and teams about this prior to the playoffs, and there wasn't a big stink about it. I'm not going to say no one commented on it or anything because I don't know. But there wasn't a big stink about it, and everybody knows the rule already. So, again, it wasn't – the letter of the law was not about weather. The spirit of the law, maybe be a better thing, was not about weather. But the letter of the law was in cases like this, the one game does stand. So I just I don't like people. It's like the NFL players complaining about discipline when the Players Association signed off on the CBA. You know, you know the rule. As a school, you voted on the rule. Sure, say that we need to change it and do everything you can to get it changed, but let's not cry about it during, you know, when it once it affects you negatively.
You know, I think that's a great way to put it. I mean, if anything, the folks that helped put this rule in place shouldn't be crying to the LHSAA. They should be crying amongst themselves as to how none of them had the foresight to see this kind of thing happen. Now, to take a step back, it's easy for me to say they should have had foresight when I wasn't here and when this rule was put into place. And I, heck, maybe I wouldn't have even had the foresight to see something like this happening. But at the same time, they do this for a living, and it's really, really unfortunate, like I said earlier, that rain ended a few baseball seasons, maybe earlier than they probably should have. But now they get a chance to rectify this situation, and that's the thing. If a rule change comes out of this, if they change that rule to be more flexible and open to situations like this where games legitimately could not have been played by a certain point in time, then they can rectify that rule. They can make something happen with it, and ultimately some good will come out of the scenario. But if they just sit on their hands, act like nothing happened, and continue on with this rule and let it strike a few more baseball teams again in a couple years, then we need to be a little more aggressive in targeting these baseball coaches for sitting on their hands and doing nothing while the kids are being punished. I don't think it's going to get to that point. Let me be clear. I don't think it's going to get to that point, but who knows?
Hey, Brett, this is Coach DJ. I guess what I would like to know and what your thoughts in reference to that particular situation. I guess the question becomes, and I've experienced it in football and also in track, how far out, let's say we get some games canceled because of weather, things like that, how far out do we allow those games to be made up? Because, see, I had a situation in football where we missed the last two games of the season because we had some real bad weather come through, and we just decided not to reschedule the games because – within the next 3 weeks, basketball season started. And, like, for me, a lot of my kids play basketball. So we also experienced it in track where it was like, okay, we had a freeze about a year or two ago where it's like we had four track meets had to be rescheduled. And then as we looked at the calendar, we were getting ready to roll into state testing and things like that. So we decided not to even reschedule them. And to me, as a coach, You work hard to get kids ready for games. You get them ready for championships, playoffs, and to not be able to play is heartbreaking even as a coach. But then we also look at what's the, I guess, the threshold as far as how far can we go out before we wind up getting into other scheduling conflicts. So I guess that could be a conversation, or what are your thoughts on that?
That's a great point. You know, I mean, I guess if the baseball playoffs did stretch too far, then you would interfere with some summer conflicts or some final exams or things like that. For the same reason, more flexible aspects of scheduling, like spring football, for example, they schedule them accordingly to get them done both when their kids are in town and when they're not taking final exams, when academics had to take precedence at a certain point. So that's a great point. I think it just comes down to rewriting whatever rules affect that in a way that is more flexible. For example, right. I think it needs to be somehow written, and I'm a professional writer, and I have no way how to do this. I have no idea how to do this, but it needs to be written in a way in which, let's say, some of those teams that had their seasons ended prematurely by rain, maybe they could have played that second round series on Tuesday or Wednesday, and then could have pushed back the quarterfinal series to a Saturday and Sunday. I know that might be unpopular in more religious pockets of the state, but
right.
ultimately the kids would want to play. That's what it comes down to. The kids want to play, especially in these championship environments.
Absolutely. Well, Brett, I appreciate you joining us again. Always good to hear your opinions. We can talk about scores and everything at any time, but, you know, always good to get another opinion. It's what I like on the show. I don't have a problem sharing mine, so I really appreciate you coming on.
Anytime, guys. Appreciate it.
Remind us how we can follow you on social media.
Everything's at thenewstar.com. I'm on Twitter at BHudsonTNS, and I've got a Facebook page, too. Search for Brett Hudson. You can find me there, too.
All right. Have a good rest of your weekend, brother.
Thanks, guys.
All right, so we're still in studio here with Coach DJ Davis. Interesting stuff, LHSAA becoming like the NCAA and, you know, steadily receiving more grief than anything. But, you know, again, that's what we have.
Yep.
They do a good job overall.
Overall, governing body.
Yeah, and, you know, it's just there's always going to be something, you know, somebody not happy. But in order for us to stay happy, we got to be happy with ourselves, and that's what Just Run the Play is about.
That's what it's about. It's about just taking advantage of the opportunities that you have, and we left Just Run the Play, that whole concept, open for interpretation. A lot of people say, well, what do you mean when you say Just Run the Play? Well, what do you want to do in life? I mean, and as you execute that. You want to graduate from college. You want to get married. You and your wife may decide you guys want to have a baby. Hey, run the play. Just do the things you need to do to execute that particular action, and that's what we're about.
I know that you have, is it 12 plays?
Yes sir.
12 plays. We've discussed some of them before. Tell us what number 12 is.
12 is basically taking number 1 and 11 and all the other 11 plays and being non-negotiable with those plays, meaning I'm not going to, you know, stray left or right with these plays. We're going to stay right down the middle. So we call play 12 the non-negotiable play, meaning that all other 11 plays, we're going to do what we got to do to make sure we don't alter. If we're going to, and that's with sports. We're talking about the baseball playoffs, softball playoffs. There are a lot of coaches out there right now that they go in with a game plan, and they're not going to negotiate that in the game plan. This is who we know we got on the roster. Here's who we're going to start. And no matter what parents say, what other coaches say, we're not going to be negotiable with this particular play or with this particular game plan. And so, and that's how we look at life, too, is that, you know, like, for instance, even me right now, I'm with all other things I got going on, I'm also in school completing and working on my master's in education and leadership, and I'm not faltering, and I'm not going straight left or right. I'm gonna run that play, and it's non-negotiable. And by this time next year, I'll be getting that degree. And that's how we talk to people when we go out and speak about Just Run the Play.
Will I have to call you Master DJ?
You can call me Coach DJ. Okay.
We're talking with Coach DJ Davis of Riser Middle School and Just Run the Play. We are presented by DBAT of Monroe. DBAT for all your baseball and softball training needs, DBATmonroe.com. Hit us up on the Twitter feed at TSports977FM. That's the Glassworks of West Monroe Twitter feed. Coach, what would happen to you if you got to a particular game? So it's a whatever night you guys play on, Tuesday, Thursday night.
Thursday nights.
So you get to game Thursday night, and the kids say, all right, Coach, you know, what's the game plan? You say, hey, look, let's just line up and see what happens. What if you didn't have a game plan?
I can tell you that the results, you don't have control of the results. And I tell people, is that there's a correlation with the things we do in life, and there's a correlation with sports. If you don't have a game plan, you may have basically taking everything that you possibly could have controlled and allowed it to be uncontrollable. You know, we know going against some of the tougher schools in our area, we know that there are some things that we can't control with the other teams. You know, maybe they have a faster player. Maybe they have some kids with more experience. But we can't control those things. But we do know the things that we can control. And that's why we practice day in and day out allow ourselves to recognize those things. So when we go in on a Thursday night, here's what we know we want to do based off what we've experienced. And we're going to go in and stick to this game plan. And now, what else that can't be controlled, we just can't control it. But if you don't go in with a game plan, you pretty much have just to say, you know what, whatever happens, happen.
All right, so let's mirror that in life. You are responsible for having a game plan. You have people that are depending on you in players.
Yes.
In life, you've got people depending on you, your family.
That's okay? Correct.
So if you don't have the game plan, not only does Coach DJ get a loss, but all those kids get a loss, and all those kids are let down by you because you didn't have a plan for them to help you carry out, just like in life.
Yeah, yeah. Just like waking up every morning and not having an idea of what you're going to do for the day is almost like going into a football game without a strategy. I mean, you're just allowing life to push you around, bully on you. And that's not really what we want. You know, when we go around talking to a lot of people throughout the region, we're hoping to be able to provide them with a game plan that they can have. So when they wake up in the morning, they know, here's what I want to do for the day. Here's some things I want to accomplish. Now, will they be able to accomplish all of those things? Probably not. I mean, just like in sports, we go in knowing here's the plays we want to run. But a lot of times we may have to, at halftime, we might have to say, look, these two plays are not working. Okay, what other alternatives do we have? And so as you move and transition, the things we teach with Just Run the Play is as you transition through life, you have to be able to have those audibles you can call to be able to, you know, adjust as you move throughout your day-to-day walk in your career and just with your relationships with people.
Real quickly, you know, we've heard, you know, both of us have been around sports pretty much all our lives.
That's correct.
And we've always heard that, you know, game day is not where it's won.
No.
It's won during the week on practice, in practice. So everyday life is practice. You don't start when you go job hunting.
No.
You got to be prepared before that. I used to tell kids all the time that were starting school, you know, in college, you know, you play how you practice. You've heard that one too.
Yeah, we heard it.
And I would tell them, this is practice.
Yeah.
Show up to class every day. Show up on time. Do your assignments. All those are good practice for when you get hired.
Yeah, and even with, you know, the fact that, you know, even in academics, you know, on Fridays, a lot of teachers give tests on Fridays. Well, the things that you do and the things you learn and the repetition and the concentration and focus on Monday through Thursday prepares you for that Friday. And so when she hands you that paper and put it on your desk and say, okay, I need you to finish this test, you have the rest of the hour. Well, guess what? You've practiced and you've worked on it all week, so it becomes second nature on Friday night. On Friday, and I was about to say Friday night because I was already finna get ready to start relating to football. And it's the same thing with sports. I mean, you go through the hard stuff. See, game days is supposed to be the fun. You know, you're flying around, you're excited because you went through all of the blood, sweat, and tears all throughout the week and in the summers.
Just like on Friday night, when that teacher hands you that test on Friday, you just run the play.
Run the play.
All right. Well, Coach DJ Davis, appreciate you.
Man, I appreciate being here.
We're not done yet.
Right.
But we are brought to you by Anytime Fitness of Monroe, West Monroe, Calhoun, and Anytime Fitness of Ruston and Texarkana. This hour is brought to you by Jeannie Eubanks, Allstate Insurance in Ruston, and Minden, Jeannie Eubanks, agency owner. Since 1995, this segment was brought to you by Greg Phillips, State Farm Insurance. Hit us up, 888-993-7762. That is the Car King hotline and the Pulpwood Producers text line. Tweet us at the Glassworks of West Monroe Twitter feed. We're going to take a break. You're listening to Talkin' Sports, ESPN 97.7 FM. But I didn't have my mic turned up, so that's probably a good thing.
I was going to say, that might have been the best thing for everybody.
Well, we're still here talking sports, me and DJ Davis. We've got another guest coming up right now. That's Michael Johnson of frontninetour.com. Michael, welcome back to the program.
Excited to be here.
It's been a few weeks since we talked. Tell me what's going on. Where are we with enrollment, sign-ups for the Northeast Louisiana edition of the Front Nine Tour?
It's going well. The sign-ups are going on right now. We've had some really good this time of the year has been high school tournament play. We've had Les Monroe ended up coming second, I believe, in state this year. Shot a one over as a team on the last day, which was awesome. Unfortunately, they couldn't beat out Bird. Ended up shooting two under, so as a team on the second day. So it's
right.
But we're excited about the opportunities for the kids in the Northeast Louisiana area. It's a great time for them to get ready to play for the summer.
Tell us once again the reason for Front Nine Tour and what you're all about with it.
Well, here's the one thing about Front Nine Tour that's a little bit different than other places. We're a one-stop shop kind of program. You pay one flat fee, and that covers the tournament play, that covers practice play, also it covers instruction, all for one flat fee, covers everything. It's an opportunity for the kids to be able to play all the game, all the golf they want to do during the summertime, and not have to travel. Our focus is developing a game for life, and so that's our net motto. And we're trying to get these kids to develop their game, and the way you do it is in the local level, not have to travel and not have the parents have to spend a lot of money outside of town. They can just bring their kids to the golf course in the morning time, drop them off, and pick them up in the afternoon.
All right, so you've got local courses set up. We'll go through those in just a minute. They'll play, they'll practice, they'll get instruction, they'll play a tour. Scores will be kept. But tell us why you got into this again.
Well, when I was growing up, I was able to play in a golf tour up in Arkansas that allowed me to be able to have the opportunity to play Little Rock Country Club, Mall Mill Country Club, some nice courses that my parents weren't members of and would never be able to afford to be members of. But I got to play them, and it gave me a passion. I wanted my son and my kids to be able to have that opportunity, give them something to go to. And it's a ministry for us, too. We do a truth lesson before each tournament that's biblically based. And so it's one of those things where we try to grow the game, but we're also trying to grow the kingdom also.
Absolutely.
Well, look, Mike, let me ask you this. It's Coach DJ Davis, Riser Middle School head football coach. What age range is that, age group or like an age, parameters?
We have three different divisions. We have a 7 to 9, 10 to 12, and 13 to 18 divisions.
Okay. Are there any other? I mean, I'm asking for obvious reasons, being a bit of middle school coach and co athletic director. Are there any other requirements? I mean, because I'm gonna be honest, I think the closest thing that I can do golf related is probably drive the golf cart. Besides that, I have no experience in golfing. But if we're able to get some kids in a position to learn the game of golf and also become, spiritually founded, get a foundation spiritually, then we all in with it.
Well, and Michael,
let me jump in
real quick, because here's what I want you to do. Coach DJ Davis is joining me today. He has a company called Just Run the Play. You can look him up at justruntheplay.com, and it's about life lessons. So I wanted him to hear what you're doing and why. Again, because he is involved with kids. Now, go ahead and tell our whole audience here about the cost and all that, because I think that's going to surprise some people too.
Yeah, it's great deal for the kids. The 7 to 9 is $195, and that covers six tournaments during the summer. They don't have to pay a per tournament fee or anything like that. That also includes practice play at different courses around the area for $1 during the week. It also includes 6 hours of instruction through OB at the Muni at Forsyth. Now for the 10 to 12, it's $275, and that covers eight nine-hole tournaments, and that also includes the practice play and the 6 hours of instruction. For the 13 to 18 division, it's $295, and that covers eight tournaments during the summer and the practice play and the 4 hours of instruction.
Wow.
All for one flat fee. You don't have a per tournament fee or anything like that.
So that's what's incredible to me is, you know, you pay a flat fee and you get practice, you get instruction, you get all the tournaments. You don't have to keep coming up with money. Yeah, you got to get there, all that kind of stuff. But logistics are logistics. You always have to work around that. But I'm impressed with it. I'm want to do everything I can to help promote it. I know that this is something you would like to as well. So, Michael, when does the front nine for Northeast Louisiana kick off?
We have a welcome meeting on the 24th of May. That's going to be at the library on 18th Street Library, and that's our deadline for the for registration. Our first tournament's going to be on the 1st of June for the 10 to 18 year olds, and then the next week, I believe it's the 8th for the 7 to 9 year olds, will be the first tournament.
All right, and what time is that meeting at the library?
It's at 6:30.
Okay, 6:30 p.m.
Library. Yep.
6:30 p.m. library on Stubbs and 18th.
Right.
Yeah, and everything's on our website. You can go to our website. It's got our schedule. It's got our practice play courses. It's got the instruction time, the dates for and times for the instruction for all the different divisions.
And
one caveat too, if somebody that's a member in Monroe or the Northeast Louisiana wants to play in a tournament in Northwest, it's only $35 to come over and play Southern Trade, so to speak.
Wow. I lost my train of thought. That's what happens when you start getting older.
It's a website.
Website, frontninetour.com, and that's nine as in the number, frontnumber9tour.com. Is that correct, Michael?
That's correct.
And do you have any other social media
We have Facebook, and we're on Facebook, and we're also on Instagram. So like us on Facebook. And on Instagram.
Okay, will do. Michael, thanks for joining us again today. Once we have this meeting, which I'm going to do my best to attend, once we have that meeting, we'll get you back on, and we'll talk about numbers. All right, so that meeting is... Was that meeting on the 24th, you said?
24th of May.
24th of May, 6:30 p.m., Monroe Public Library, Washita Parish Public Library. Mm-hmm. On Stubbs and 18th Street in Monroe. Michael, thanks so much for joining us again.
Well, thank you.
All right, have a great rest of your weekend.
You too.
And continuing with Golf Coach, we're talking sports on ESPN 97.7 FM. I'm in studio with Coach DJ Davis, head football coach for Riser Middle School, and runs the company Just Run the Play. You can check him out at justruntheplay.com. You can visit our Facebook page, the Assurance Financial Facebook page, facebook.com/talkingsports977FM. Remember, no G in talking. We're country folk.
Yeah, talking.
And but let's go through some more high school stuff right here. I've got all the championships for the LHSAA golf championships.
Oh, okay.
So in the girls division, not many schools with girls golf, but the great thing about this is, even if your school doesn't have a team, you can play individually.
Right.
So the team standings for the Division One girls, that's the larger schools that was played at the Le Vuchens Club in Youngsville. No team from our area in the team standings, but Aofi O'Donovan of Neville, she finished third overall with a score, I guess tied for second actually, with a 152 score. And then 24th was Ann Bishop of West Monroe High School. She shot a 225. In the two rounds. Over in Division Two, there's only Division One and Division Two in the girls. Again, no area school in the team standings, but Lauren Turner of Sterlington did finish 11th with a 179 over the two-day tournament. So congratulations to those young ladies.
Congrats.
And in Division One boys, as Michael said, West Monroe finishes second overall in the team standings to Byrd. They shot. West Monroe did shoot 21 strokes better on the second day than they did on the first, so that's a great improvement.
Go Rebs.
Joey Kirkland of West Monroe finished third with a 147. Michael McMahon, son of the great, well, I'm sorry, let me dial that back a little bit. The good Dr. Steve McMahon and his great wife, okay. Joy McMahon.
Yeah, you got to flip that.
Yeah. Michael McMahon finished sixth overall. Both of those guys did finish high enough to advance.
Good.
So Jack North of West Monroe finished ninth with a 151. Peyton Underwood of West Monroe finished 23rd. Joel Boyette of West Monroe finished 25th. And then Chandler Davidson of Ruston did finish 34th, shooting a 162 over the 2 days. So congratulations to those guys in Division One. In the Division Two standings, we did not have anyone. I apologize. I'm sitting here looking right at it. We did have Neville that finished fifth.
Okay.
Fifth in the team standings. And for some reason, I did not go through and highlight, but Will Sumner finished in the top 10 at Neville, shooting a 147. Collins Tennis of Neville finished with a 153. Peyton Rogers of Neville finished with a 162. And Zach Harden of Neville finished with a 174. And that's Division II boys' final results. So I apologize for not for missing those when I printed all that out. Wichita Christian finished sixth in the team standings in Division III boys. Garrett Dolchek of OCS finished sixth. You had Michael Forte of OCS finishing 31st. Matt Pender of OCS, 34th. Andrew Moore of OCS, 38th. And Nathan Bromley of OCS finished 43rd in Division III. Division IV boys, St. Fred's finishes in sixth place. Finishing third individually was Grayson Gilbert of St. Fred's. Jack Weir finished fourth, also of St. Fred's. Weston's Dawson Toller finished 14th. Cedar Creek's Trent Ellis, 25th. St. Fred's J.C. Witherington, 36th. And St. Fred's Stephen Moore, 43rd. So, looks like we got some pretty good golfers in our area.
They may need to get together and put together a program to train me, because I have no clue of what's going on. I like it, but I just...
Well, you know the summer's only 3 months long, so I don't know if that's enough time.
Well, I'm probably going to need three summers.
Okay.
Collectively.
All right. Well, tell me your thoughts on Michael and the Front Nine Tour. I know that you found that pretty interesting.
Yes, I did. I mean, any time you have someone or put together a program that is focused on creating opportunities for young people to not only get better physically, but also get better mentally, it always sparks an interest with me, and I'm always wanting to do whatever I can to help, promote it, volunteer. Or even try to get a few kids involved in some form of fashion. So kudos to him and, the Front Nine for doing that.
I think that's something we can both get on board with and try to promote, get more kids out there and see some more positive influence.
Yes, sir.
It's time to take another break. This hour is brought to you by the Riverport Creative Group, riverportcreativegroup.com. Thanks to Jeremy Hilton, Shield to Shelter Insurance in West Monroe, for sponsoring this segment. We'll be right back with more. We're going to talk to DeMichael Dizer in our What's Up segment. Come up next here on ESPN 97.7 FM. Welcome back to the program, Talking Sports, here on ESPN 97.7 FM. It's just you and me, and I'm Byron Avery, your host. Here on Talking Sports, I'm still joined in studio with Coach DJ Davis.
Yes, sir.
JustRunToPlay.com. And today we're going to talk to a local athlete who's done a lot of good things. And we're going to find out from him just what's up.
Sometimes it's good to know what's up, what's going on.
Yep.
How you doing?
But so before we get him, get with him, we just want everybody to know that this is our Where Are You Now segment, and we call it What's Up. All right, we'll go ahead and go then to our guest, DeMichael. Thanks for joining us today.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
Well, you are a story of a local athlete who's done some big things. So tell us what year. I know you went to Sterlington, played there. What year did you finish there?
2003.
I really feel old right now. But you went on to do great things from there, played at Grambling, and had your shot, played a couple years in the NFL with the Seahawks.
Yes, sir.
So tell us about all of it. Tell us about playing at Sterlington, what it was like to get recruited and going to Grambling and doing big things there, and then what happened after that.
Okay. Well, playing at Sterlington, I played for Coach Dale Ashley. He was my head coach all 4 years, and I had a blast playing there and learning from him. I got an opportunity to play on both sides of the ball. I believe we were 1A at that time. So we didn't have a whole lot of kids, probably, you know, 40, 45 kids on the team. So we were all, you know, kind of put in a position where we had to play on both sides of the ball and learn offense as well as defense. So, you know, as I got into my later years of high school, you know, we started to get a little more notoriety, and we had a few more kids, and the school was starting to grow, and our class was the first graduating class of the new Sterlington High School that they're in now. So, you know, we were able to go to the state championship game that year. We came up a little short. I think we lost to Port Sulphur in the Superdome my senior year, I believe 24-16 or something like that. But it was a good game. Good career at Sterlington High School. I had an opportunity to go back there and coach once I finished playing in the NFL. But to stay on track, after I left Sterlington, going through the recruiting process, I didn't do everything I needed to do to be eligible for Division I football in terms of my ACT scores and things like that. So I was forced in a position to where I had to choose to go to junior college or you know, Grambling State, and there was a few other schools. And I had kind of built a relationship with Coach Sammy White at Grambling State over the years while I was at high school. And his daughter was actually my fourth grade teacher. So it actually started when I was in fourth and fifth grade, building a relationship with him. And I got a chance to visit Grambling, kind of liked the campus and the atmosphere there, and it was close to home. So I decided to attend there and was able to play there for 4 years. Won a SWAC championship there. Had an opportunity to play for a second SWAC championship and came up a little short my senior year doing that. But learned a lot from my coaches there, playing under Melvin Spears, Coach Broadway. Had an opportunity to meet Eddie Robinson. Was one of the highlight points of in my life. Thus far, was getting a chance to meet him before he passed. But got a chance to play with a lot of good players, Bruce Eugene, Clyde Edwards. The list goes on, but just had an outstanding opportunity there at Grambling and learned a lot, man. And I had two NFL coaches, Sam Washington and Coach Lewis. You know, Coach Lewis may go down one day in the Hall of Fame, man. He came back. He was with the San Diego Chargers coaching for a while, and then he came back to Grambling that year and volunteered coaching. So had an opportunity to learn a lot from him. And when Grambling was over, had an opportunity to work out for quite a few NFL teams, and ended up with signing a free agent contract with the Seattle Seahawks in 2008. Sustained a severe knee injury early in that season. Had to spend that season on IR. And then during that time, I was still able to learn, go to practices, watch games, learn film, learn from coaches, learn from players. I actually spent a lot of time with Deion Branch at the time. He was coming off the same similar knee injury that I had just sustained. So I got a chance to spend a lot of time with him and kind of learn the game of football from him, as well as the business of football from him. So, you know, and then I sustained another injury during rehab in my second year of professional football. So after that, the off season of my second year, they made a decision to kind of to let me go. I didn't really get a chance to work out for any other teams after that, simply because my health wasn't 100%, and a lot of teams were skeptical about me passing physicals and things like that. So after that, you know, I worked out on my own, tried to finish doing my rehab as best I could, but never really got back to 100%, and just never really had an opportunity to go back and really work out for teams and try to go finish my career with another team or anything like that. So when the time came and the doctors told me, you know, even if I did get back 100%, you know, I may have 2-3 years to play. Just weighing my options, I decided to go ahead and move on to the second phase of my life. And that's when I started coaching at Sterlington, and then transitioned from coaching to training and coaching, and now I'm doing both.
Well, you know, I've known you for a couple of years now, and I know that you're doing some great work. Back to Grambling for just a minute, but Coach Sammy White, mm-hmm. you know, I can remember watching him play in the NFL, and I remember his rookie year. Not that I'm that old or anything, but I remember his rookie year watching him go across the middle and catching a pass, and his helmet going flying. I remember that hit. Yeah. I'll never forget that. I mean, that was probably, I think his rookie year was like 74.
Yeah.
You know, so I was, well, you know, I was
older than
I know what I was doing.
Do you know the guy who hit him?
I cannot remember that, no.
Jack Tatum.
Oh, man. Well, that explains it all. That explains the helmet flying. I wouldn't want that to happen to me.
Yeah, Coach White never. We asked him about that all the time. The only thing he says is he held on to the ball.
That's right, he did. I do remember that too. He held on to the ball, and that helmet went flying. That's one of the biggest hits I've ever seen. And like I said, that was back in, I think, 74, which I believe was his rookie year. But he did go on and had a great NFL career coming out of Richwood. A lot of those guys over there, and his younger brother, James, mm-hmm. I know mm-hmm. got to play in a Super Bowl with the Eagles back in 81, and that's when the Raiders won a Super Bowl over the Eagles that year. So I've met James and talked to him as well. But there's been a lot of players come through Grambling that have made it to the NFL, and you get to join that list. So I know that's a big honor for you.
Yeah. And that was one of – go ahead.
No, you go.
That was one of the reasons why I made the decision to go to Grambling, was because of the tradition that they had of putting out good NFL players, especially at the defensive back position.
Yeah, Everson Walls, can kind of, you know, he's one of those can validate that, being mm-hmm. Being one of the best defensive backs to ever play in the NFL.
Right.
But I know that now, so you went to Sterlington, mm-hmm. and as you said, you know, didn't necessarily do everything that you needed to do to be prepared. And it's kind of funny that we have that you said that with Coach Davis here, because he's got a company called Just Run the Play, mm-hmm. which is about developing young people. And I know that that's what you're doing now as well. You're giving back to the community. You're working, like you said, as a trainer. But Victory Sports Academy is doing a lot with young people in the area. Tell us about that.
Right. So what Victory Sports Academy is, it's an elite training facility. We're teaching kids speed and agility. They can come in. They can set up one-on-one sessions. They can be trained and coached at the position that they play. For example, I've got 4 or 5 kids right now who are playing a new position, don't necessarily understand everything that's going on while they're at practice, so they're able to bring their questions that they have at practice, bring them to me. I can help answer those questions. I can correlate with other coaches around the area and communicate back and forth and help get these kids the understanding that they need and the knowledge that they need to play the game, so that we can break this cycle of athletes just playing sports but not learning the sports. You know, I know a lot of guys, as I came through, you know, they were tremendous players and tremendous athletes, but they didn't learn the game. They just lined up and played on Friday nights, Saturday nights, and Sundays. So we're trying to get these kids to understand how the game works so that when they're like me and they can't physically play anymore, they can still contribute by being able to teach the game to younger people.
Absolutely, because I know you've got several guys over there, and his name, for some reason, is just not coming to mind right now, but the guy that played quarterback at Grambling and was with Green Bay for a little while?
Glenn Ellis,
yeah. I couldn't remember his name.
Yeah, Washtenaw High legend.
Yeah.
Well, DeMichael, I really appreciate you coming on today. I know what you're doing in the community and how you're helping these young people and stuff. I've been over there. I've seen it. I've seen guys who are out of college and still living a dream, trying to
right.
make that dream happen.
Right.
I've seen high school kids. I was in there, Thursday, I think, Wednesday or Thursday.
Yeah.
And there was a kid from Sterlington there, and I was just like, good grief, that kid's a beast. He's
yeah.
a beast.
Yeah.
But go ahead.
We've got a good client base, man. We've got kids representing all the schools in the area. And I want to say, if I can, I want to give a congratulations to Trey Caldwell from ULM. He was in our camp at Victory Sports Academy for his pro day. So we trained him for his pro day. We worked on him with his 40 and his position drills and things like that. And he was able to get drafted this past draft in the 5th round. So I want to say congratulations
Absolutely.
To him.
Hey, Coach, this is Coach DJ Davis, head football coach at Rogers Middle School. And as B mentioned, we also run the play company, which, you know, we put ourselves in a position. We motivate, you know, not only young people, but, you know, adults as well as to just winning in this game called life.
Right.
And what I would like, I've had opportunity to see some of the things you do, you know, from afar. Obviously, being in athletics, you keep up with the local people,
mm-hmm.
and you root for them, and that's what we've been doing. We root for young men like you who are doing things like you're doing. What for the parents and the adults that are listening right now? What would you say to these parents who have young people that are coming up, you know, regardless of whether it's football, basketball, whatever, just athletics, period. What are some
mm-hmm.
things that you would recommend to these parents as these kids are getting ready to make that transition? Just say, like you mentioned earlier about just being prepared and doing the things necessary. What can parents do? You know, I know parents get them involved in a lot of the extra work and stuff like that, but just from even
right.
just the academics and the athletics, what could parents do to make sure that their young people, their young student athletes are ready for that transition from high school to college?
Right. The number one thing that I tell parents all the time, when their kids are getting ready to make that transition from high school to college, is don't wait till the senior year to try to get things in order. The recruiting process now is completely different from when I was in school. You got kids that are getting recruited by colleges when they're in the 8th grade.
Yes, sir.
So that tells you right there, in the 8th grade, it's time to get your affairs in order. As a parent,
okay.
you need to get the kids' affairs in order. You need to find out what the ACT requirements are, first of all, to be eligible to participate in collegiate athletic sports.
Mm-hmm.
You need to know what the GPA is. Then you need to have some type of recruiting base of your own where you can send out highlight films. You've got this documented. You've got this on film. You've got him interviewed here. He's been in this magazine. He's done this. He's been there. He's talked to this coach. You know, those type of things for these colleges. But you cannot sit around and wait for a letter or a questionnaire to come in the mail before you try to start doing these things. The parents need to be very involved with the academic counselors at the high schools. They need to know what the kids are doing, what he needs to do. But you cannot sit around and wait till you're a junior or senior to try to get these things done, because the recruiting process now, I mean, it starts much earlier. So I would tell the parents to definitely be involved and do not sit around and just let coach. Don't wait for coach. Don't wait for the guidance counselor to do everything. If you're going to completely invest in your child, then do just that and completely invest in them. And that is time as well, not just money and signing them up for things and dropping them off. But you got to invest the time and energy it takes to do this complete recruiting process.
Well, coach, I appreciate you so much coming on today.
It's good stuff.
I really do. Let's stay in touch as we Most do definitely. Anyway. But tell all of us, give us the website, the address, and the phone number for Victory Sports Academy.
Victory Sports Academy, the website is victorysportstraining.com. The physical address is 708 Stella Avenue in West Monroe. The telephone number is 318-600-3363. You can come by anytime. I'm normally there all day long. You can swing by, call us, send us an email on the website or anything like that if you need to get in touch with us.
All right. Well, DeMichael Dizer joining us today for What's Up, former Sterlington football player, Sterlington alum, Grambling alum, and former member of the Seattle Seahawks defensive backfield. DeMichael, thank you so much for today.
Thank you, guys. Appreciate you for having me.
All right, have a great weekend. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll be joined by Sean Williams of ProFootballSpot.com. You're listening to Talkin' Sports, ESPN 97.7 FM.
You got the touch. You got the power.
Welcome back to Talkin' Sports. It's just you and me, and I'm B. Byron Avery, your host here on Talkin' Sports, ESPN 97.7 FM. We're brought to you by Anytime Fitness of Monroe, West Monroe and Calhoun, and Anytime Fitness of Ruston and Texarkana. This hour brought to you by Riverport Creative Group, riverportcreativegroup.com. Also, we're presented by DBAT of Monroe, DBAT for all your baseball and softball training needs, dbatmonroe.com. You can join the program. 888-993-7762. That's the Car King hotline and the Pulpwood Producers text line. You can hit us up on Twitter, the Glassworks of West Monroe Twitter feed at tsports977fm. We're joined in studio now by Sean Williams, ProFootballSpot.com, Hoodat Nation Redemption on Facebook. Also by Jake Arthur, covers the AFC South and Notre Dame football for ProFootballSpot. You can follow him on Twitter at JakeArthurPFS. And, Jake, welcome to the program.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
No problem. One of the things, well, not one, but four things. I had four interesting takeaways. I don't know if takeaways is the right term, but anyway, four things that I was really interested in about the draft. One, of course, was the New Orleans Saints because I'm a big-time Saints fan. Number two, the Dallas Cowboys draft, because unfortunately there are a lot of Cowboys fans in this area. Number three, the Cleveland Browns, because of the trades, you know, them trading down twice, and I feel they did a pretty good job of helping out their team. And then the fourth thing is just that I couldn't figure out the Tampa Bay Buccaneers winning 12 games over the last 3 or 4 years total. And in the second round, they draft a kicker. So what? Tell me first your take on the Saints draft. I've heard from some are saying that they had the best draft in the NFC South. I do believe they had a solid draft overall.
Yeah, I'd have to agree. I think where they only have 5 draft picks, I think they made the most of that for sure. Sheldon Rankins, he's a plug and play kind of guy. He could have gone to any team, and he's going to be successful. So I think that was really good. I think they were really top-heavy in their draft because, of course, after round two, I don't think they picked you until round four. But Rankins and then Michael Thomas, that's a great pickup. He was my second-ranked wide receiver, and so getting him in the middle of the second, that was really nice. Von Bell, he could also be a really nice addition to that secondary. Onyemata, he's kind of a guy that you'll have to wait on just because of how, raw he is and everything. But then to follow it up and kind of put a bow on the draft with Daniel Lasco, I liked that a lot. Blasco was someone I was actually eyeing for the Colts. And if he can stay healthy, he should be a pretty good tailback.
Jake, this is Sean. How you doing today?
Good, Sean. Good, buddy. Good to hear from you.
I have a question, though. As great as the every review of the Saints draft that I've heard so far was all positive, and as well as the review on their UDFAs that they signed following the draft. But after all of that, they released the power rankings, and there were only four teams lower than the Saints, and Vegas established the odds, and we're like 66-1, which is also there at the bottom as far as NFL teams. With everything improving through the draft and what have you, can you explain to me how it is that people still have such a negative take on where the Saints are?
Honestly, if you kind of turn it to Vegas, you have to just take that with a huge grain of salt. Everything is just completely on paper. You know, the Colts, for example, 2012, I think they were picked to finish dead last. They wind up, you know, getting a playoff spot. And then, let's see, last year, I think they were Super Bowl favorites. And, you know, of course they lost Andrew Luck, but they went 8-8. So that kind of thing, it's just, a lot of times you just don't know how those guys come up with their formulas to, you know, judge teams. But the Saints have always been a team to me that could just be dangerous because they can catch fire anytime. You know, anytime you have Drew Brees and Sean Payton, you know, they've addressed, you know, some offensive pieces. You know, they've lost some, but they've kind of retooled. And then that defense has been a work in progress for a while, it seems. But I think they're finally getting there. I wouldn't agree on them being, you know, one of the bottom teams in the league. I think they can still compete in the NFC South. It's not something I would even really entertain too much. It's almost like putting out an NFL mock draft months before the draft, you know.
Sure.
You know, and I think that one of the reasons people have graded the Saints draft fairly low is because a lot of people still don't think they should have taken a wide receiver that early. But like many people have said, that wide receiver was worth the pick because we did need to replace Marcus Colston. Brandon Coleman is not proven yet. I think he could.
I think this is going to be a pivotal year for Brandon Coleman. Generally speaking, it's my opinion that the hardest position to make the roster for the New Orleans Saints has always been wide receiver since Sean Payton has been there.
Well, it's because they are so important in that offense.
And Coleman is facing a really pivotal year in his career as he's already been there, what, 2 years now? And
this is either second or third year. I can't remember off the top of my head.
He's been borderline as far as being successful in that system and all. He's going to fully believe that this year he's going to have to either progress or fall off, and there won't be room for any middle ground in that, not with Thomas coming aboard as well.
So the Saints draft, it was really kind of, I also think maybe a reason is it wasn't real sexy. It wasn't this big excitement, but they did address their needs. So I think they did well. And in their undrafted free agents, they signed 19. But I think another plug-and-play guy is going to be Landon Turner from North Carolina. The guy was a dang All-American and didn't get drafted. So a lot of people had him high. They just didn't pick him. But offensive guard, I think that guy is going to be an important piece immediately.
Oh, I'd agree. I think the Saints had a couple of really nice undrafted free agents. Landon Turner and Zach Allen, both of them going undrafted was kind of really surprising. Zach Allen is, you know, as far as being able to just anchor into the ground as an offensive lineman, he's one of the better ones in the entire draft. You know, he's kind of the ultimate underdog type. You know, he's kind of undersized, 6'2", 296, a little bit. He's kind of short and stubby. But the dude can anchor down. You know, I saw him down at the Senior Bowl, and I loved what I saw out of him. You know, other than, you know, maybe Nick Martin, he was probably the best center there. I mean, Landon Turner as well, you know, I think that was a bigger shock that he went undrafted. You know, he's a guy who can come in and compete for a starting job right away on a lot of teams. So.
Right. You know, having guys from programs like that, Michigan State in the Big Ten, obviously they play a lot of big games. You got the safety Michael Caputo out of Wisconsin. So that's a good signing to me as well. You got an offensive lineman out of Texas A&M. You got another safety from North Carolina. So
I think that you're looking at a distinct possibility between your on the list of undrafted free agents. You're looking at a very real possibility of as many as 5, 6, 8 maybe making the final 53-man roster.
Well, and in the last 10 years, you know, the Sean Payton era, there have been few coaches who've had as much success with undrafted free agents or late-round picks as the Saints. I mean, look at the undrafted. You know, Colston was a seventh-round pick.
Pierre Thomas
undrafted.
Kyrie Robinson.
Chris Ivory. Sure. Lance Moore.
Mm-hmm.
All big-time contributors to the Saints. And
I've looked at during
only one of them drafted at all.
During the Sean Payton era, I've looked at the undrafted free agent signings as the other part of the draft.
Right.
Because they've made that much use of it.
Right, exactly. Quickly, Jake, the Dallas Cowboys, as briefly as we can, you know, I had predicted that the Eagles moved up to number 2 to take Ezekiel Elliott because they knew that the Cowboys would take him. You know, everybody was saying the Cowboys weren't going to draft a running back that high, even if it's Ezekiel Elliott. But I was dead set that that's what they were going to do, and I thought that's what the Eagles were doing because with Sam Bradford and Chase Daniel, they had two quarterbacks that can play football. You know, and if you give them an Ezekiel Elliott that can run the ball, catch the ball, and block and pick up the blitz, you give them a much better chance to be successful. Now, they didn't do that. They took the quarterback, but I'm still going to stick to my guns and say that the original plan was to draft Elliott, but when Sam Bradford started crying and whining, then they had to change track. So the Cowboys took, without a doubt, in many people's opinion, the best running back in the draft, but also one of the best players because of all he can do.
Yeah, I think it was a pretty good pick for them. I mean, it's kind of a luxury already having Darren McFadden and, you know, the newly signed Alfred Morris on board. But that offense was already good with a healthy Tony Romo, and now it's scary if Tony Romo stays healthy. Even if he gets hurt again, I think they can actually survive now because they've got a player like Elliott. You know, he's the best, you know, among running backs that are among the cream of the crop. He's probably the best blocking one that I've seen in a long time. You know, he can catch the ball. He can do it all. One comparison I was seeing for him throughout the pre-draft process was Edgerrin James, and I really like that one a lot. I think that one sticks.
Right, absolutely. I mean, there's no doubt that he's a difference maker. You can't count on the health of Tony Romo. You haven't been able to for several years. So this way, just like my thoughts with the Eagles, but with those two guys, quarterbacks on the Eagles, they were in a better position than the Cowboys as a backup. But, you know, I'm not going to say with anybody under center, you're better with Ezekiel Elliott, but you're better with Ezekiel Elliott.
Mm-hmm.
I think the possibility is there with Elliott in making the starting position. I believe that he'll be able, with that mammoth offensive line, that as I said last week, that offensive line in Dallas was built to keep the ball on the ground. I think Elliott will eclipse everything that DeMarco Murray did 2 years ago.
Well, I can tell you this, that the let me find my sheet here. I know I still have it. The Dallas Cowboys, okay, in the last 20 years, he was only the third running back drafted by the Cowboys in the top 20, okay? Actually, not necessarily in the last 20 years, but in the common draft era, okay? The other two times?
Tony Dorsett and Emmitt Smith.
And both of those guys are in the Hall of Fame.
Sure.
Okay, so we don't want to see that happen with Ezekiel Elliott, not because we don't like Zeke. We don't like the Cowboys. So, but anyway, look, we've got 3 minutes left, Jake. Quickly go through what you thought of the Cleveland Browns and their draft.
Well, you know, they kind of hoarded a ton of picks, and a lot of people said, you know, that's kind of their new small ball, money ball approach. I think they made the most out of a lot of those picks. You know, they signed pretty much an entire new receiving core with Coleman, Jordan Payton, Rashard Higgins. I love all three of those guys. Got a couple pass rushers with Ogba and Nassib. The Cody Kessler pick was kind of interesting. There were some other quarterbacks that maybe they could envision developing and pushing RG3, but if that's who they feel their guy is, then, you know, all, more power to him. But one of their favorite picks they made of mine was Scooby Wright in the seventh round, almost at the very end of the draft. You know, he's pretty versatile as a inside linebacker. He can rush the passer. And they kind of got a guy cut from the same mold in Joe Schobert. So I think this draft helps them right away. They may not be great, but they definitely got better after that draft.
Yeah, I think they're going to be one of the most improved teams in the NFL. You know, RG3 I don't think is a long-term answer, but I think they've done a lot to help their situation, because RG3 can play football. RG3. Wow, that just didn't sound right all of a sudden. And you know what, just real quick, I'm not a big fan of the when they say Griffin the Third. He's not Griffin the Third. He's Robert. He's not the third Griffin. There's more than three Griffins. Come on. He's Robert Griffin now, and his dad doesn't play in the NFL. So, anyway, last, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Of course, we don't like them because they're in the NFC South with our Saints. But they just didn't – they haven't had a good season in a while, thankfully. But they go in the second round, and they pick a kicker. Tell me what you think about that. Of course, he's from Florida State, which, you know, has produced some good kickers. But why do you pick a kicker in the second round if you're Tampa Bay?
Oh, my thinking of that is, and I believe they traded up to get him as well.
The
kicker, Roberto Aguayo is arguably the best kicker to come out since Steven Gostkowski there in New England. And Gostkowski has the potential to be the best kicker of all time, in my opinion. He's arguably the best kicker to come out since then. And when a kicker is that good, you just don't know when they're going to go in the draft. And they may have been eyeballing him the whole pre-draft process and, you know, said, you know what, we're going for it. We're going to go get our guy. And if they think they have that guy that's, you know, Steven Gostkowski, Adam Vinatieri, you know, a guy cut from that mold, then I think they're like, okay, let's go get our kicker for the next 15 years.
All right. Well, Jake, I really appreciate you joining us. We've reached the end of our program. Tell everyone how they can keep up with what you've got going on.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me, guys. Well, I'm on Twitter quite a bit. You can get me at JakeArthurPFS. You can also go to ProFootballSpot.com and check out content for me and my team and guys like Sean as well. We're always pumping out really good stuff, so we're excited for you guys to get to see it.
Absolutely. Thanks again, and have a great rest of your weekend.
Yeah, thanks for having me, guys. I appreciate it.
All right. Well, that's going to wrap up today's show. Talking Sports, ESPN 97.7 FM. Quick shout out to our broadcast partners, Car King, Pulpwood Producers, Glassworks of West Monroe, Riverport Creative Group, Assurance Financial, Cadies of Monroe and Farmable, Greg Phillips, State Farm Insurance Agency, and Jeremy Hilton, Shield of Shelter in West Monroe. Thanks to our guests today, DJ Davis, Sean Williams, DeMichael Dizer, Jake Arthur, Michael Johnson. We will do this again next week, I think. So appreciate you guys being with us. You've been listening to Talking Sports, ESPN 97.7 FM, and thank you, John Tabor.
Thanks for listening to the best of Talking Sports with Byron. To listen to the show live, tune in every Saturday to ESPN977.com. Or subscribe to the show in iTunes, on Stitcher, or at RedPeachSports.com.